Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the websites onthisday.com and time.com. Question number one. It was on this day back in 1955 that Billboard reported that which song was the most popular song in the United States? Was it A, Catch a Falling Star by Perry Como? Was it B, You're the Reason Our Kids Are Ugly by Loretta Lynn and Conway Twitty? Was it C, The Ballad of Davy Crockett by the Wellingtons? Or was it D, The Twist by Chubby Checker? 1955, most popular song. Which was that anyway? And question number two. This Monday, May the 30th, is Memorial Day. What was the original name given for this national holiday? Hint, Memorial Day became its official title in the 1880s, but not its legal title until 1967. So what was it originally called? Was that A, Flag Day? Was it B, Decoration Day? Was it C, Remembrance Day? Or was it D, Veterans Day? So, Memorial Day, what was its original name? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of May 27th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1913 that Igor Stravinsky's composition, The Rite of Spring, premiered in Paris. Today, in 1913. And it was 72 years ago today, 1950, that Frank Sinatra made his TV debut on NBC's Star Spangled Review. Sinatra, TV, today, 1950. And in folk and roots music news, we have this article entitled, The Great Bonnie Raitt. Singer receives Lifetime Achievement Grammy. This is published in AARP, the magazine, April-May 2022 by Jim Farber. I'm living for the ones that didn't make it, says Bonnie Raitt on her new album, Just Like That. In the album's liner notes, the 72-year-old lists 14 people she's loved who have died in the past few years, from musical peers such as John Prine to her nephew, Miles Raitt. I actually do start every day thinking to myself, I get another chance, Raitt said. I'm going to live this life for the ones who didn't get that shot. Raitt, who was honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award at this year's 64th Annual Grammy Awards, talked with us from her home in Marin County, California. What does winning this award from the Grammys mean to you? The Grammy organization changed my life, After I won Album of the Year for Quintuple Platinum, Nick of Time, and all those other Grammys in 1990, I suddenly had more options. I could play with a different level of musicians. I could raise a lot more money for causes. And when I opened my mouth, people actually printed what I had to say. You had that breakthrough at 40 years old. Did that concern you? Oh, I'm going to use Broadway terminology here. If you're the ingenue or the leading lady, it's harder to age gracefully. But when you're the equivalent of a character actress, which is what I'd say I am, you age in a more welcoming way. My fans would have stayed with me if I'd looked like Methuselah. Why do you think you've lasted so long? I've earned my audience. I think if you're just doing it to pay the bills, people will sense that. I'm lasting this long because fans know I mean it. Vangelis, playing a variation of his Chariots of Fire, introduces our classical music news. It's entitled, Vangelis, Oscar-winning Chariots of Fire composer, has died, age 79. This is published in ClassicFM.com by Maddie Shaw Roberts on the 19th of May, 2022. The Greek composer Vangelis, who wrote the music for Chariots of Fire and Blade Runner, has died, age 79. No cause of death was given. Born in 1943 near the city of Volos in Greece, Vangelis didn't study music in the traditional sense, but grew up surrounded by the sound of Greek folk songs and Orthodox Christian hymns. He started to play the piano age 4, but claimed he had no formal training and never learned to read music. Vangelis' breakout was the Chariots of Fire 1981 soundtrack, for which he scooped that year's Academy Award for Best Original Score and reached number one in U.S. charts. Using a synthesizer as a soloist with a backdrop of orchestral sounds, Vangelis produced one of the most stirring film themes in the 1980s. The main track has become synonymous with slow-motion athletic sequences over the past four decades. Vangelis' sound spanned genres from jazz and classical to prog rock and electronica. He once said, "I don't always play synthesizers. I play acoustic instruments with the same pleasure. I'm happy when I have unlimited choice. Rest in peace, Maestro." Red's Piano introduces our jazz and swing music news. It's entitled, During World War II, Steinway pianos were parachuted onto battlefields to provide relaxation. Called the Victory Vertical, or GI Steinways, pianos were dropped into battlefields during World War II to provide some recreation for the American troops. This is published on the 5th of May, 2022 in ClassicFM.com by Sophia Alexandra Hall. Steinway & Sons is a German-American piano company which was founded in 1853. The high-profile piano company annually dominates the high-end grand piano market and has won several awards for its multiple patents and musical instrument designs. But one design created during World War II was more aerodynamic than previous pianistic models. Around 5,000 special models of a piano called the Victory Vertical, or G.I. Steinway's, were made during the Second World War. A small piano designed to be carried on ships or dropped by parachute from an airplane to bring music to the soldiers on the battlefield. The first Victory Vertical parachuted into battle in 1942, and around 3,000 pianos were sent into military service during the war, while the rest went to churches and schools. Music was used as an escape for American troops abroad, and the government looked to the pianos as a way to help soldiers remember what they were fighting for. The president of Steinway & Sons had four sons in the military at the time of the creation of the Victory Verticals, so had close connections with the front lines. Steinway had a letter sent from a private Kenneth Cranes, stationed in North Africa in 1943, to his mother back in New York. In the letter he recounts, "Two nights past, we received welcome entertainment when a jeep pulling a small wagon came to camp. The wagon contained a light system and a Steinway piano. It is smaller and painted olive green, just like the jeep. We all got a kick out of it and sure had fun after meals when we gathered around the piano to sing. I slept smiling, and even today am humming a few of the songs we sang." Sadly, the private was killed in battle a week later. The Victory Verticals were light enough to be able to be lifted by four men holding specially placed handles under the keybed, which made them easily transportable, and all the instruments came with tuning equipment and instructions. The pianos also didn't have legs like most upright pianos, as otherwise they wouldn't have been able to withstand an airdrop. Other features of the rugged but durable pianos included water-resistant glue, anti-insect treatments, keys covered with celluloid instead of ivory, and brass strings which were covered in soft iron instead of the traditional copper. Due to restrictions, they were also designed using a tenth of the metal used to make a normal piano. While most pianos come in a black or dark wood finish in order to camouflage them into landscape, these pianos were painted in olive green, blue, and gray. The G.I. Steinway pianos brought joy and music to a place where both are usually silenced. Introduces our music research and technology. His piano? It's entitled This Piano Staircase, Social Experiment Revealed How Music Makes Everything Better. This is written by Sienna Litton, published in ClassicFM.com on the 10th of May, 2022. Users of Swedish public transport were treated to a musical interlude in their journeys, snubbing the escalator for a tuneful trip up the stairs. Faced with the choice of taking the stairs or escalators, which would you choose? Some days it's just easier to stand still and let the escalator do the hard work for you. But what if taking the stairs would somehow be made more fun? Enter Sweden's musical stairs. In 2009, designers noticed that the stairs at the Odenplan metro station in Stockholm, Sweden, were largely being ignored in favor of a neighboring escalator. Fueled by the idea that having fun can change behavior for the better, they set about finding ways to revolutionize the step experience, hoping to encourage more commuters to use the stairs by making it fun. Overnight, the usually conventional staircase was transformed into a black and white musical mural, with each step sounding a different note when trodden on. On footage recorded by a nearby camera, the first few travelers of the day can be seen tentatively tapping their way up the keyboard. As the station gets busier, commuters and tourists in their plenty can be seen opting for a more tuneful exit to the station, and the escalator alternative is ignored. The video, which has been viewed nearly 10 million times on YouTube, shows everyone taking part in the fun, from toddlers to dogs. Some commuters went for the avant-garde approach, tapping out an atonal cacophony as they scaled the stairs, whilst others accomplished their commute with a major scale. One pair even hopped in tandem to create a tuneful procession of major thirds. Andreas Dahlquist, who was part of the creative team behind the project, said everyone has the choice of the escalator or the stairs. You know you should be taking the stairs, but it's easier to take the other route. If we make it a fun experience, a good experience, then people will do it. Patti Smith's cover of Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit introduces our rock and pop music news. It's entitled Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit, remixed in a major key, shows the importance of tonality. This is published by Kyle MacDonald and ClassicFM.com on the 20th of May, 2022. And always will, until knowing your music theory is important, as illustrated in this example from a tonality-obsessed music geek. Here's the proof that tonality can make or break any song, or at least can change it quite a lot. When we say tonality, we're talking the key centers of a piece. Think of Beethoven's love of dark and brooding C minor, or the joy of a Bach concerto in bright and brassy D major. With a bit of digital audio wizardry, music geeks are able to take recorded tracks and, with alternation to particular notes, essentially swap keys from major to minor, or in this case, the reverse. The early 1990s saw a proliferation of dusky, moody rock anthems, and there is perhaps none any more iconic among the long-fringed grunge brigade than Nirvana's anthem Smells Like Teen Spirit. The original is in the key of F minor, but just take a listen to it in a cheery F major. You'll still hear the F major B flat, A flat, D flat chord progression, but those major chords remove all the angst and change it completely. The song makes me feel weirdly like everything's going to be okay, says one YouTube user. That's the power of a major key. It even sounds like it could be an uplifting theme to a 90s teen heartthrob movie. The power of music theory. And in local music news, we have this article entitled E.J. Henderson Guitars and Ukuleles in Asheville. And this is written by Rebecca Waltz, published in Our State Magazine, June 2022 issue. Tap two pieces of Brazilian rosewood together and listen. They'll ring like a bell. That's one of the many tricks that Jane Henderson, owner of E.J. Henderson Guitars and Ukuleles in Asheville, has learned from her father, famed luthier and old-time guitar player Wayne Henderson. The wood's unique sonic characteristic makes it highly sought after by luthiers like Wayne. But Jane, who left a career at an environmental nonprofit in 2011 to follow in her father's footsteps, prefers local, sustainably resourced woods like maple, oak, and cherry. While Wayne's instruments are traditional, he believes that pre-war Martins are the holy grail of guitars and strives to make his in that fashion. Jane likes to get creative with colorful inlays, including a kudzu vine motif designed for a friend who has goats. Jane has learned a lot about crafting guitars from her father and has developed as a luthier in her own right. But she says that the best thing to come out of her apprenticeship with Wayne is the strong bond that the two now share. Of all the places I've gotten to play music, which are all over the world, Carnegie Hall, all kinds of places like that, Wayne says, nothing compares to getting to hang out in the shop with my daughter. Jane adds, I learned not just guitars, I got to learn about my father, too. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this day back in 1955 that Billboard reported that which song was the most popular song in the United States? Was that A, Catch a Falling Star by Perry Como? Was it B, You're the Reason Our Kids Are Ugly by Loretta Lynn and Conway Twitty? Was it C, The Ballad of Davy Crockett by the Wellingtons? Or was it D, The Twist by Chubby Checker? Correct answer. Answer C, The Ballad of Davy Crockett by the Wellingtons. The Wellingtons were a singing group who performed the title songs for several television programs in the 1950s and 1960s, including Gilligan's Island and Davy Crockett. They also appeared regularly on the televised music show Shindig. Fess Parker, who played the role of Davy Crockett in the TV series, actually composed and sang and made guest appearances on many TV series. But 1955's The Ballad of Davy Crockett was performed by the group called the Wellingtons. And the answer to our second question, this Monday, May the 30th, is Memorial Day. What was the original name given for this national holiday? Hint, Memorial Day became the official title in the 1880s, but not its legal title until 1967. What was it originally called? Was that A, Flag Day? Well, actually, that's coming up on June the 14th, and that's more related to the Revolutionary War. Was it B, Decoration Day? Yes, that is the correct answer. It wasn't C, Remembrance Day, which was November 11th on World War I, or D, Veterans Day, also November the 11th from World War I. So the correct answer? Answer B, Memorial Day was originally known as Decoration Day. As noted in a Time magazine article dated May 25, 2018, by Samantha Grossman titled, Seven Things You Didn't Know About Memorial Day, Memorial Day isn't just an excuse to take a long weekend and loaf around eating grilled meats. So before you head out to your barbecues and pool parties, here are some facts about Memorial Day, everybody's favorite summer kickoff holiday. It was originally called Decoration Day to honor the deceased. Soldiers would decorate graves of their fallen comrades with flowers, flags, and wreaths, hence Decoration Day. Although Memorial Day became its official title in the 1880s, the holiday wouldn't legally become Memorial Day until 1967. It wasn't always celebrated the last Monday of May. After the Civil War, General John A. Logan, Commander-in-Chief of the Grand Army of the Republic, called for a holiday commemorating fallen soldiers to be observed every May 30th. But due to the Uniform Monday Holiday Act, which took effect in 1971, Memorial Day was moved to the last Monday of May to ensure long weekends. It's legally required to observe a national moment of remembrance. In December 2000, Congress passed a law requiring Americans to pause at 3 p.m. local time on Memorial Day to remember and honor the fallen. But this doesn't appear to be common knowledge, since few Americans actually pause at 3 p.m. And James A. Garfield delivered a rather lengthy speech at the first Memorial Day ceremony. On May the 30th, 1868, he addressed the several thousand people gathered at Arlington National Cemetery. "If silence is ever golden," Garfield said, "it must be beside the graves of 15,000 men whose lives were more significant than speech and whose death was a poem the music of which can never be sung." So let's close out today's program with a John Philip Sousa musical tribute to this upcoming holiday. The Washington Post March. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.